We're with Keith Nolan in St. Louis, Missouri, and we're using a condenser mic, so you can just talk in normal voice and it'll amplify any sound. Really, and if there's anything that's, waste the time on the tape and so on, we can just cut it out or just totally ignore it.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, why don't we just hold up for a minute? The first question I want to ask, and you may ramble or wander in your discussion if you wish, because it is a personal sort of thing. It's not a lecture. It's not quantifiable information that we're after. Is what memories, what personal memories do you have of the Vietnam War or of that period, either through television, newspaper, family, or anything that relates to the war that's personal? And how old were you at the time?
Let me think. I think I was about 8 years old back in 72, and that's when I first started looking at Life magazine and stuff like that. And I remember when I was reading that kind of stuff, all you'd see is things like drug addicts and fraggings and stuff like that. And I don't think it ever really showed the bravery of these people over there. I think it's pretty, distorted, I guess, because you never saw it, what I thought was the truth about it. Because I think the people over there were already, the reporters, I mean, were pretty liberally biased as to when they just got there. And they just saw things the way they wanted to see them. And I don't think they really reported accurately.
Mm-hmm. What specific things do you remember seeing on television?
On television, I remember specifically I saw the fall of Saigon in 75. I can remember that pretty well. I'm right, they showed guys like Marines knocking people off barbed wire and, punching them in the mouth and stuff like that. And I remember on television, mostly I can't remember anything specific. I just remember seeing people running around and bombs and such. And I remember the B-52 thing back in 72 on Hanoi. That's about all I can remember on TV. Mostly I remember the magazines.
Okay. Do you, just curious, you mentioned looking at Life magazine and so on. Mm-hmm. Do you remember at all, sounds like a side subject, but it isn't really from my point of view. Do you remember at all the photograph of General Loan, the man who was the chief of the National
mm-hmm.
Police Force?
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you remember seeing it at the time?
I don't know if I saw that. I think I might have seen it like a year later lying around in some library, maybe. Yeah, I saw it.
When you saw that photograph, what did it mean to you, or if anything in particular?
Well, it didn't really mean much to me, because I think that goes on in any war. You can't really, that kind of thing's going to happen no matter what's going on. And just because, I mean, the Viet Cong did it, the Americans did it in World War II, it happened everywhere. And I think that they really blew it out of proportion.
Well, what was happening?
You mean what was the situation when he did it?
Yeah.
As far as I know, they're having some kind of firefight in Saigon during the Tet Offensive. And they captured this, I think it was a VC officer, and I think just in the, he was caught up in the excitement and blew the guy's brains out, I guess. That's how you want to say it. That's as far as I know, I'm not.
Well, just an aside. The specific question that we're interested is, how did you become interested in the Battle of Khe Sanh? And you mentioned that you would want to talk about general interest in the war and then the battle is a kind
that
of a,
was, that
something
came
related. So why don't you work into it that way?
Well, like
first of all, how did you become interested in the war?
Well, like I said, I thought it was the way they reported on was pretty distorted, and I didn't think it was the people who were the sole servicemen who were there weren't given credit for what they did. And that interested me because I've always been interested in the military a little bit, even since I was a little kid. So I got interested in that. And also,
well, could I stop and ask you that?
Oh, yeah.
As a young person now, how did you know, or what gave you the intuition that the people who were fighting the war were not getting their proper due? If the information you were getting was what other people were getting.
Well, like I said, I was always interested in military, so I know that even if it's an unpopular war, that people are still doing things over there that are worth taking note of, and I'd see. A lot of people in my family have been in the military, so I can't think that just because they're in Vietnam, they're screwed up, and because they're in World War II, they're good guys. So I had to think about that. And also, I don't think it's people in this country kind of forgot about it. Nobody knows anything about it. Like in school, the teachers, all they talk about is drug abuse and fragging and desertion. Not desertion, but refusal to go into combat. And they never talked about any of the bravery, I guess you'd say, and the sacrifice people made.
So are you saying that part of your response or interest in doing original research stem from classroom or the inadequacy of classroom presentation?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Could you give us a little bit more specific example?
I mean, like what one teacher said. I can remember what one guy said in last year in history class. He started talking about it, and he said that most of the American troops were just totally demoralized, and there was a high rate of heroin abuse, and they'd go out on patrols and just sit around their butt and not do anything, and just said they made a lot about, you know, throwing grenades on commanders and things like that. And that's when I got interested, because I stood up and said a few things about it. He was good. I mean, he gave me a chance the next day in school. He said I could give a talk to the class about it. Mm-hmm. So I guess he was fair there, but I don't think he knew what was going on.
What was the teacher's, as far as you could tell, what was the teacher's source of information?
I think same thing he was a history teacher, and he specialized in American history before the Civil War and a little bit afterwards. And as far as after, in the 20th century, he just got concerned with what he read in the papers and what he saw on TV. He didn't have any personal interest in it. He just repeated what he heard, I think. That's about...
Did the students in the class accept...
Oh, yeah.
...the teacher's point
yeah.
of view? Were they receptive to yours, or what?
Well, it was. I don't think they really cared either way. So, I mean... When a teacher said something, they'd agree with me, I said something, they'd agree with me, so I don't think they knew either way what was going on.
Why didn't they care?
Why didn't they care?
By the way, I'm not assuming that you can read people's minds, but it is of interest that it's maybe, you know, we've heard that from a lot of people, even from the veterans, that when they came home, people didn't.
Well,
care one way or the other.
Well, maybe, though, because, I mean, when I grew up in the war, I had no idea there was a war going on. I thought we were still fighting World War II. And Vietnam was just a word I didn't know what it meant. So I guess pretty much that, they have no idea what happened. So, I mean, lots of people, I mean, even people in their 30s and 40s don't really know what happened. So I guess ignorance. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, if they didn't care, why did you?
Well, like I said, I've been interested in the military, and I think that these people did something that... I mean, putting your life on the line is something that you just can't forget about. And mostly, I mean, when I grew up, I heard about the Jane Fondas and the Joan Baezes, people like that. And I just thought they were just totally out of their minds. So...
Like Jane Fonda, what was her... What did she do that was so bad?
Well, I thought when she went to Vietnam, I think it was 1972... And I think I just saw a picture of her wearing some North Vietnamese Army hat and, you know, cheering around with all these North Vietnamese Army people. I thought that was just, I mean, you can't say that's just a traitor. And I think just because of an undeclared war, it's pretty stupid to say, well, she was just following her conscience or something like that.
Well, do you think did she help the enemy? Is that?
Well, I'm not really sure what she did exactly. I just know that she was over there and giving support. I guess moral support, I don't know about if she ever, you know, donated money or anything like that, but I mean moral support to the enemy. And I don't see how she could do that when at the same time they're shooting at our guys, which I think is pretty traitorous.
Well, you're not the only one that feels this way. Bill, this is an interesting thing. We've run into this that so many of the veterans we've talked to, the name that comes up more often than anyone else is Jane Fonda.
Everyone.
Strange. Interesting. I mean, you know, more than Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's a negative reference, but they refuse to see her movies.
Yeah, I won't see them.
Yeah, but it's an interesting point. I don't feel that way myself.
I've read a lot of POWs. I've done a lot of reading from history. And I just finished a book just the other day.
POW by Hubble, I think it was.
And all the stress these men went through, and the torture they went through, not to say then to look up and have her staring in the face.
Well, did she show up?
Yeah, she. Well, she was. She interviewed some of the POWs.
Well, I remember one.
I didn't know that. I'll look at that book.
You're
not the only person, by the way, who's mentioned that book too.
Could may well be. I don't know if this is a true statement about Keith. But Keith is brought up in a home of. and I teach history, so, and he's been brought up in a home of books and me talking, and it may well be that he became aware of things. He sat on the desk, and maybe that, I don't know if that opened him up, and I've often told him not to take things I say as one-sided. Always make sure you examine, because I'm pretty well set in my own ideas, but although I try to be even myself. But I think he has tried to do that. But he has been brought up in an atmosphere where there's the dinner table and what have you. Things were discussed a great deal. He became very knowledgeable, aware is the word I should use. Became very aware of things and interested in what happened.
Hey, let me get to a specific question. Could you describe from the beginning the steps in the research that you conducted? The types of books and who you contacted.
Okay.
You can take your time on this. You don't have to rush through it.
Well, this is not about Case Sambo. Can I use this example? I use about Way City in my research. Well, first of all, I'm interested in Case on the 10 offensive, those 1968 battles in the very beginning, January, February. And so what I did is I contacted these the place you're going to, the Marine Corps History Department, and they sent me some material for free. And then I've been in contact with that guy for about 2 years, and he just keeps giving me stuff when I want it. So that's been a big help. So then I went through the papers, and I've been reading books by reporters and veterans coming back. So then I started writing authors in care of their book company for a little more detail. And then I did that, and it got interesting because I thought, a few things that nobody else knows about. Then I did that for a while. And specifically on that Way City, I read a magazine article written by a Marine in Leatherneck Magazine. So I wrote him a letter, and he called me up, and he gave me some information. I think he gave me the CBS videotape of Battle of Way City, and he gave me a couple pieces of a VC flight they captured there, and stuff like that. So I contacted him and got some stuff. Then I contacted the Marine I saw in the videotape, and that's the one who worked down in Kansas City till last week when he got transferred, and he invited me down to go talk to him. So I got some stuff from him. And when I was there, another guy, a gunnery sergeant working in the same office, was a tank man in Way City. So I talked to him for a while. And I guess that's basically what I did. I just got started looking at books and wanted to know a little bit more than they wrote.
Okay, let me ask you some specific questions then. Why Tet? Why did that interest you?
Well, I think Tet was for two reasons. It was about the biggest battle, the most famous one the Americans were involved in. I think the 1972 Easter Offensive might have been bigger, but I don't know. But the biggest one the Americans were in. And also, because of the thing, the way the press reported about it, I thought it was a classic example of how they screwed things up.
Okay. Now, specifically, how did they misreport it?
Well, I don't know. It wasn't like a conspiracy. They're all going to try to get the president or anything like that. But I think like a case sign, I think it was one C-130 crashed. And that thing got in so many films, made it think that there was just piles of these things blown up all over the runway. And also like General Lone, I think, I can't pronounce it right, who shot that VC. They gave that plenty of attention when I think that's just one small aspect that doesn't really matter. So I guess that's about two things that matter. And also, I went to that book by Braestrup, big story. He has lots of things with press, news articles and stuff like that. And he tells what they wrote, and he tells the facts about them, which pretty contrary. Like, I think there's one where this guy, he describes the Marines as uneducated, dirty, frightened. Then he describes the VC as, tough little guys going around, like giving them compliments, and I think that was pretty biased because I don't see how I could tell what the VC were doing up there.
Okay, now within Tet, as far as your particular research, you were interested in the Battle of Hue. Why that one?
Well, I think first of all, I saw it on CBS News, and it looked pretty interesting. Interesting, I guess. See all the houses and the Marines running around, and it seemed like it was. A lot of Vietnam, they talk about just, little patrol actions and things like that. But this was like Marine regiments taking on NVA regiments in about a month fight.
Okay.
That was pretty interesting, I thought.
Now, you know, of all the choices you could have made within the Tet Offensive period, what about the why the Marine battles rather than others?
Well, the Marines, I always thought the Marines were the best people this country's got as far as the service goes, and I think they, you know, best morale, esprit de corps, that kind of thing. And, like, you know, my dad was a Marine, stuff like that, so that was interesting.
What did your dad tell you about the Marine Corps that made it sound so good?
Well, he just said that a lot of, they're stuck together, they're good people, they weren't a bunch of screw-ups and stuff like that. And even, like, they even can take people like nobodies off the street. When they're Marines, they just feel better because it's such part of a tradition and history of 200 years.
By the way, my father was a Marine. Oh, yeah. this is a tradition. What about the sense of tradition? What do you mean by that?
Well, like when you compare it to the Army, the thing is the Army, you know, join the people who join the Army, see Europe, stuff like that. And the Marines tend to go more toward, you know, serve your country, that kind of thing. And I think that makes a big difference. And also the Marines, they've got the image of being the tough people. Like in the Army, I mean, you can, I don't know personally, but it seems like in the Army you can make rank in no time at all, but in the Marines it takes you more time. You gotta do, like I've compared, when you look at guys from Vietnam in the Army and guys from the Marines in Vietnam, the Army guys come back loaded with medals, and the Marines guys, I mean, they probably earned them too, but I mean, they give them away quicker in the Army, and the Marines, you really gotta put something out. At least that's how I see it.
Have you ever, I'm just curious in terms of the idea of tradition, have you read any Marine Corps history? And if so, could you tell me some of the high points that, you know, impressed you?
Well, I've read some Marine Corps history. I guess the thing that got me was when they got famous back in World War I at Belleau Woods, stuff like that. You know, shooting, picking off guys, 1,000 yards, that kind of thing. Kind of got them famous. Then I kind of like that, the Banana Wars, Nicaragua, down there. I think that's kind of exciting. And then I guess World War II was the big thing, Iwo Jima and Tarawa and all that, where they got their fame, really, and John Wayne movies and all that stuff.
What did they do in all these historic periods that impressed you?
I guess they won.
How about John Wayne? How did he impress you?
Well, he doesn't really impress me, but I think that he's, for an actor, I think he stands out pretty much for what this country stands for. Like in contrary to Jane Fonda.
Well, specifically?
Specifically when Jane Fonda went to the war and supported the Viet Cong, John Wayne went to the Vietnam and supported our country. I guess it's about specifically.
Darn thing. Why don't we go back to the thing?
This is being honest to himself.
Okay. The next thing I'm going to ask you about, Keith, is, you know, any anecdotes that you have. Obviously, by virtue of doing this research, you've interviewed people who have been changed by the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, you don't have to be specific, or, you know, the names of the people are not important, but, you know, you, in a sense, went out and did research and met history, or living history.
A little.
Yeah, and, to a certain degree, what did you find? These people, had they been changed, or what did that experience do to them that made them special and maybe made them especially interesting?
Well, as far as interesting, I think it's just pretty interesting that they were there and supported this country, but I'm not sure about how they changed. I really didn't get to know them that personally to find out about that. As far as certain things go, though, one guy talked about he thinks that this country should recognize what the Marines and other services went through over there. He thinks that's important. And another guy, I talked to two people, and both of them said the same thing, that they think this country should recognize what they put out. So I guess
did they say why they felt the country did not recognize?
I don't think they said why they didn't recognize. They just thought they should. They didn't specifically say why they didn't. Well, one guy, Sergeant Major, who was in Way City, he specifically said that he thought the press put too many stories out about hippies and drug addicts in Vietnam and stuff like that. And he didn't think they gave enough reportage to the people who are really doing a good job.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, I can recall, if I can just...
No, please do.
If I was going to support him, one time we were watching TV, and I think it was around Easter time, and I can recall we were sitting watching TV, and the news commentator, whose name escapes me, nationally known news commentator, made the point that there had been comments made about the fact that the news reporting seemed to be very biased to anti-war. And he no sooner got that out of his mouth than the next thing he saw in the film was it was an Easter holiday in Vietnam. It was no sooner out of his mouth than the next film they showed was not the average American kid in Vietnam at Easter time, but a congregation of drug addicts. That's exactly what they showed. And to my way of thinking, he just simply supported the view that he just had commented on. Mm-hmm. They didn't show the average American kid who was probably going to church or riding his mom or you know, getting his equipment clean. They showed a pack of youngsters who were caught up in drug addiction. And they were passing the things around. And so, you know, this to me just supported exactly what... okay, if you're going to show that, then show some other kids too. Show the other side of the story. Anyhow.
No. This is all germane. Any thoughts, Keith, in addition to what you said? Of course, let me ask you this. Did you hear, you met the sergeant major, you met these other people. What was it about these people that impressed you? Did the war experience set them apart from
others?
Yeah,
I think so.
But in what way?
Well, I think the main thing was just being there, and they're Marines and they're volunteers and so on, and just being there was set them apart. I think it made them a little different from whoever else wasn't there. I think that the people I met who were pretty proud of what they did, they were glad to serve, and I think that person is a little superior to the person who wasn't there. I mean, the way they were, they were, like I said, proud. They weren't ashamed of being there. They weren't caught up in the drugs or anything like that. I think that makes them important.
Well, were they fulfilling some sort of duty, or?
Well, I guess you could say that, I guess.
To whom?
To this country, I suppose. I guess you could put it that way.
To anybody else? I mean, is it a personal responsibility?
Well, I don't think they owe it to, like, you know, president or anything like that. It's just the country. Or the Marine Corps, whatever you want to say, they owe it to whatever they're in. Because, I mean, this country's got liberties, and you just can't sit back and pretend it's going to stay this way without doing anything about it.
See, one of the things we've discovered, which I never would have believed until I got into it, is a lot of these guys got through on a day-to-day basis for the Marine Corps.
Yeah. That's what the people told me.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the one guy I talked to is a recon Marine. He picked up 3 Purple Hearts and a Navy Commendation Medal with Combat V. And he was in there from 69 to 70 with 1st Recon Battalion. And what he told me about is he really did not care about Vietnam as a country. He just thought he was fighting for America and the Corps. He said there was a lot of esprit de corps, and that's what the people were concerned about. He said the people themselves, the Vietnamese people, he really did not have a lot of interest in. He just said he was told to fight there, and he was fighting for the Corps and the country. Which I guess you could say about any war, too, because especially Vietnam now. And this,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And the sergeant major, well, he was more, you know, country, corps, that kind of thing, too. And well, he's a professional Marine. He's been there about almost 30 years, so that's what you can expect. That's the kind of people they got.
Any memorable phrasings or statements that they made that impressed you, kind of linger in your mind at all?
I really can't remember anything specifically. I got down on tape, and if you want me to, if I go through it, I can write something down if I hear it.
Well, I just wonder if there's anything kind of echoed in your own mind. There's you probably have seen this in 42 Dean.
Yeah.
The newsletter, and the guy we interviewed, Mr. Maris in Tulsa, claims that he's the author of this statement, but I can't quote it verbatim either, but something like, those who have fought for life taste Yeah. I forget exactly what it is, but savor life in a way that those who have been protected.
What's saying life has a special flavor for those who fought for it? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah. And he claims to be the author of that. And I just wonder if anybody had said not necessarily as aphoristic as that, but anything like this.
Not that I can remember.
Did they feel that...
Well, hold it. There's one guy, the guy, the recon marine, he said, I asked him, would he rather not have been in Vietnam? He said the experience was something he wouldn't trade it for anything. So he was glad to be there. Well, I guess that can be something.
Well, what did he mean, do you think?
Well, he said mostly that when you think back about it, the bad stuff looks pretty good now and you laugh about it. He says being there, they just bitch daily when they're there. But when you get back, you remember your buddies and what you did and stuff like that. Said it's good memories. Said there's some bad memories too, but...
What were some of his bad memories?
Well, there was one... Let me see. I guess there was one bad memory once. Some Puerto Rican Marine, he got high on drugs one time and tried to kill the gunny sergeant with his M14. So I guess he didn't really like that memory. Said they beat him up, though. Said that was one specific thing that... Which I guess the news would have jumped on real gladly. That was an M14, I'm sorry. And there's another thing when he almost got killed. Him and seven other guys were checking out this base. There's about 400 BC in there. He said that was a pretty scary experience. Said he got so scared he just couldn't reload his gun. He was just shaking and bouncing around.
Was he under fire?
Oh, yeah. Said that he killed about five guys there. They're coming over a ridge at him. Said he just totally got scared out of his mind.
What were some of the good experiences?
Well, he mostly talked about the friendship and the closeness and the esprit de corps, like the Marines, and that kind of thing. And like he's got a couple scrapbooks full of pictures and things like that he took. He said when he goes through them, you can tell that he's kind of, you know, proud and stuff like that, that sort of thing.
Could you describe the scrapbook and what was in it?
It was a scrapbook where you lift the pages up and stick the photos in and lay it back over. And he had photos from his tour, and when the government, when he came back, the customs people took all his gory pictures away of dead people and stuff like that. So the pictures he had mostly were just guys walking around in the bush and stuff like that. Then he had one picture of some Marines lying around full of shrapnel, which they didn't take. And he had a picture of him being promoted to corporal, and a picture of one of the Navy corpsmen being given the Navy Commendation Medal, and that sort of thing.
When he showed you the pictures, are there things that he lingered over, talked more about than others?
I think he talked most about killing the VC. That's what he talked about a lot. Do you want to... Yeah.
Why did he stress that?
I'm not really sure. Maybe it's... To him, it's really personal to go and shoot somebody. Yeah.
But he was a recon, right?
Right. He said he saw plenty of stuff.
Right. Recon, of course, the different points of view on recon. Depending on your point of view, they're got people in more trouble than they, you know, help in some cases.
Well, he was recon for... Well, there's one thing. His firebase got overrun once, so he saw plenty of stuff there. He said there was 22 VC piled up in front of his bunker that him and his guys were in. He was in that. He also was in... when they were back in their home base, they had... He said they'd grunt around like infantrymen out in the bushes instead of being recon. So he saw some stuff.
Our experience was frequently that, my personal experience, that these recon people were not really well trained. I'm not saying that this guy wasn't, but just let me finish that. And they go out and get stuck, get surrounded, and then we have to go out and rescue them, and this could be
mentioned that.
Yeah.
He mentioned, he said there's most of the people were well trained, but he said later on they got a whole shipment full of guys who just out of boot camp, no recon or nothing, they just threw them in there. He said they screwed up for a while.
Yeah, you got to know what you're doing in that sort of thing.
He said there was some situations where the infantry had to come and get them out. Not him personally, but some other companies in his battalion.
Well, it could happen even to the best guy, but
I think he mentioned...
The fewer times it happens, the better off everybody is.
I think he mentioned Jimmy Stewart's stepson, or adopted son. Do you remember his name? Because he mentioned that guy was second lieutenant in recon in '66, and he got killed during on the DMZ and got a Navy Cross, but I haven't found his name out yet. He said that was once in a situation where they were to come and pull him out. And I'm trying to find his name, but I'm not going to write Jimmy Stewart because it's not worth it, really.
Well, the Marine Corps might be able to supply
him. That's what I'm asking in the next letter.
Jimmy Stewart might have some interesting comments to say.
Yeah, I might, but I don't know if it's really worth, you know, asking about his dead kid. You know.
Sure. Well, of course, it can hurt, but it is, just like any death, it hurts, but it's also a fact of life, too, that you have to, can't forget.
I have to think about it, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we might do it. Let me ask you this. Have you been changed or affected by the research?
Well, I think I've become more wary of the press and what they write about. That's one thing.
Could you give a specific example where you've seen wariness has recently been?
Well, personally, like that Nicaragua revolt this summer or just a couple months. Like, I read the newspaper. Every picture, I think it was almost every picture, showed either a kid or a woman lying around crying. There's no pictures of anybody shooting. It's just all these refugees running around. And I think that was pretty biased. And also, they made out, I guess it would be biased, when that reporter was killed. I didn't see it. My dad saw it. He told me about it. The guy who gave the eulogy for the dead reporter,
Frank Reynolds.
Yeah, Frank Reynolds. He just totally badmouthed the Somoza regime or whatever. I can't remember.